You're listening to Digital Quarantine, Redefining the New Normal, a podcast sharing insights about different business topics during the global pandemic. The show is hosted by Sydney Schaefer, founder and CEO of Kingfish Digital. Thank you for listening and enjoy the show. Welcome back to another episode of Digital Quarantine with me, Sydney Schaefer. Today we are joined by a familiar voice, that is Armin Asejo.
Hello, hello.
Welcome, Armin. He is again the Global Digital Marketing Manager over at Fluke Process Instruments. I think I got that right this time, right?
Yeah, you did. Yeah.
Awesome. It helps that you guys can't see this, but I'm staring at Armin with a background for an internal hackathon he's doing that actually says his title. So that actually helps a bit, doesn't it?
Just a little bit.
So anyways, today we're going to talk about intent-based marketing. And the reason that I thought this might be a good topic for today's podcast is because people more than ever and businesses now more than ever have to learn how to be more creative with their marketing and get into the mindset of the consumer, because it's a very turbulent time, not just because of COVID, but because of what's happening in the entire world. So people's priorities are a little bit different than they used to be. So we have to be a little bit more creative than I think we were even 3 months ago. I think everybody was kind of, most people, unless you're in a startup, were in an almost like automated process, so you're at a job long enough and things worked and you just kept doing it. So let's get into the mind of the consumer for a second and talk about intent marketing. So intent marketing is similar to what you'd imagine it would be. So it's basically marketing to people based on their intent, or kind of based on their mindset when they're searching for a product or when they're in that research phase. So if we dig into that a little bit deeper, there's probably a few different levels of intent. So people who are in maybe an awareness phase, if we start with the beginning of the marketing funnel, those people are cold. They might not even be looking for your product or service. They just may be open to it. So we want to try and target people based on like an interest or something to expose somebody to our product. But most of the time, what a business wants to target is those warmer customers, or warmer prospective customers, I should say, that are going to be maybe searching for your product or service or in the market for it now. They may just not know about you yet. So that's when we're looking at, you know, searches. So it might be search terms on Google. It might be they've subscribed to a service or something. But that's really what we probably should talk about, don't you think, Armin? Is how do you do that? How do you get in the mind of a consumer who is looking for your product now?
That's right. A lot of the experience that I've had with this has really been based on things like solution selling and value proposition, right? When you start at the top of the funnel, when we're talking about search terms and search intent is a big part of that, right? As you said, a lot of people might not know what they want, but they know that they have a problem they want to solve. So in the case of something with Fluke Process Instruments, we make a lot of products that have to deal with measuring temperature, very high temperatures in specific applications. So for example, a metal forge where you have temperatures going to, you know, 2000 degrees Celsius or something silly like that. Obviously you can't just be like, I need a thermometer, because a thermometer is not going to be what it is. You might not know exactly what the term is. But if you type in something, or maybe you use your Siri and ask, how can I measure high temperature heat treatment or something like that? Or I need a very high temperature thermometer. That's when you start maybe, hopefully you show up on those searches. And if you format your website or your search terms, if it's a PPC landing page or a campaign, you can go after those, what we would call longer tail keywords, where it's actually a full phrase. And that's the intent of that person actually looking for that. Mm-hmm. But again, as you mentioned, these are going to be very cold, right? Because they still don't really, they know that they have a problem they want to solve, but they don't know exactly what they need to solve it. And so you have to create experience for them. So once they search for that term and they click on your website or your landing page, that you're offering up the right products or the right solution to solve their problem. And that's how you're going to start moving them down the funnel. They're a little bit, they're not totally cold at this point, but maybe they read something like, okay, yeah, that sounds pretty good, but you know, I don't know if I have the budget for that, or maybe I don't have the authority to buy that because I need my boss to sign off on it. Or maybe, you know, I need this, but maybe I don't need it right now. Or even like, oh, this is not the right time for it because of COVID, and maybe we'll talk about this further down the line, right? I've just outlined the what we would call the BANT criteria, right? The budget, authority, need, and timing. Unless they've fulfilled all four of those things, then they're probably not going to buy, or they're not ready to buy. So then you have to determine like what's their intent. Maybe you kind of need to usher them down the process a little bit. And that's where things like nurture tracks come into play, or remarketing. So let's say they look at a product and they don't end up requesting to buy it or requesting more information. Well, you can use like your Google Ads to retarget them and say, hey, in a month, send them an ad that said, hey, we know you were looking at this product. Why don't you take another fresh look at it and see if this is the right time for you? So there, like you said, there's a couple different stages, probably even more so depending on what the customer or what the product is. Mm-hmm. But it really does come down to that intent and what they really need to do. And usually it's not like, oh, I need a parameter because I know exactly what I need. That's a little harder to find a person like that than someone who says, I just need to measure really high temperature and I don't know where to start.
Yeah. I mean, if you want to put this in an easier like industry to grasp, like think about e-commerce. E-commerce right. is probably the most widely experienced industry because everybody is searching for products online. Mm-hmm. So when you're looking at, shoes.
Yeah.
You know how long sometimes people shop for shoes?
Oh, especially when it's online because you can't go try them on, right?
No.
You want to make sure that it looks right. And you know, that's why places like Zappos are really good because of good return policies and things like that. Mm-hmm. So they help you down the process. And if it's not what you want and not what you intended, then you can return that back and hopefully get what you need.
Yeah. And I think that also helps advance people down the funnel because if you are looking for shoes and you stumble upon Zappos's, you know, organic search listing, you click on it, you get to their website, you're like, okay, well, maybe I'm going to look for some athletic shoes. And you're browsing for hours trying to find the right pair of athletic shoes. And the reason why you end up converting in the end is probably because you're like, oh, I can buy three pairs of shoes. I can try them on and I can return them if I want to. So, you know, people who are maybe on the colder side maybe become warmer because of the things you offer, like the reviews on a product that are available, the size charts are really easy to read. Your customer service, like there's also elements on your website that are trust signals.
That's right.
That advance people down the funnel. So, I mean, that's a lower touch product, right? Well, your instruments, I would imagine, are probably on the higher end in terms of costs. So
absolutely.
I would imagine the buying cycle is even longer than
it is.
Shoes.
There's a lot of time involved there where either they need to get in touch with a salesperson and that person kind of ushers them down the way, or they just need time to think about it. And that way we can set up certain campaigns to just remind them, even just a quick email reminder to say, hey, we're still around. You know, you looked at this a while back and maybe now is the right time and you can actually make a purchase. So reach out to us because we're here for you. Right. Mm-hmm. And that message is really good, especially during these times with the pandemic, just saying, hey, we're here for you. Right. That, and we're open and we're available to help you or support you is a big deal because a lot of places aren't right now.
That is the truth. I think what sets companies apart is probably their customer service
right.
and the transparency now more than ever. Best Buy actually is another good example. They aren't allowing people in their stores yet, except like on a consultative basis. Like you can also return products, but they don't want anybody in their store. However, their return policy is a lot better than it used to be. And the ability to, when you get to the store, they have a tent outside where you can actually talk to somebody if you need to. But they've actually set things up in a way that protects their employees, but it also, their website is so much more transparent. I don't know how many times I actually am purchasing from Best Buy now, which is, it sounds crazy because it is, because I was never, I was never a Best Buy person until I realized that now they're offering curbside pickup and all this stuff. I mean, the positioning and the ways that you can purchase a product, the more ways that you allow somebody to experience your products or like get them or return whatever, that's going to reduce the risk in somebody's mind. I don't know why, but there's always like this risk of buying a product. Like, how am I going to return it?
Oh,
what
yeah.
am I going to do? I mean, that's consumer behavior 101 is
right.
aversion to risk.
Yeah, and especially during times like this, here's another example. I've been shopping for a webcam, right? And I know Logitech makes some really good webcams because the one that's on my iMac or my work laptop, they're not very good, right? So I was like, okay, what's an upgrade? Well, every Logitech webcam is pretty much sold out right now. I've checked Amazon, I've checked B&H Photo Video, I've checked Adorama. They're all sold out, right? But my intent is I have a problem I'm trying to solve. I'm trying to have better quality video for video conferences and things like that. That's my problem. So what are the solutions? Well, you know, I go on Amazon and they had a very highly recommended, camera that was of a brand that I never heard of, but it was marked as Amazon's choice. So that was already a good marker for that. Mm-hmm. I had a lot of good reviews and it wasn't just like five, it was like 348 reviews and there was all 4.5 stars. I'm like, well, you know, this can't be that bad then. And the price was competitive, right? Yeah. So I was like, well, let's try it. So I ordered it and it's supposed to arrive tomorrow. I'll give you a nice review for it after it's set up. But that's just a good example of, hey, they knew that was my intent, is to buy a webcam, and Amazon's site was set up in the right way where, you know, maybe I searched for Logitech, but it gave me alternatives because the other ones were not in stock. And so we'll see if this works out well. But, you know, this seems very simple. It seems like what we're used to, but it wasn't like this all the time, right?
No. And I think that's what's even more crazy about what's happening now is I feel like you have to be even more open to alternatives.
Yeah.
Like, not just from a company standpoint. Like, you're thinking about alternative marketing channels and all this stuff right now. People mm-hmm. are having to be more creative, but like from a consumer behavior standpoint, people are even more open to trying new products or services because maybe their current products are sold out, they're harder to get. So they're going to try something if it arrives sooner rather than later.
Right.
I know in the beginning of the pandemic when I buy everything on Amazon, and they started moving to only essential goods, mm-hmm. I started shopping from other places because I couldn't get the things I needed soon enough.
Absolutely. And that's a good point. You know me, I'm also a big photographer and I would buy most of my stuff off Amazon, even the photography equipment, but because certain things weren't available on Amazon, I went looking in other places. Great example of this. I got myself a Nintendo Switch a couple weeks ago. Okay. And it was totally sold out on Amazon. I was looking for a Switch Lite. And guess who had it? Adorama had it. They're a photo store, but they just happened to have some other video game stuff. So I bought it from them because they had it in stock. And if you've never played the Untitled Goose Game, you totally should. It's totally worth it. It's one of the best games you can buy for the Switch. But in any case, that's a good example. It's like, you know, the places that you're used to going might not have what you need. Mm-hmm. And you know, your intent is you're ready to buy. So who's going to offer it up? Well, there's alternatives out there that you probably normally wouldn't think of even having it in stock.
Mm-hmm. I think that's also part of the broader conversation that we're having, you know, with intent marketing, because I think companies that you haven't heard of before probably have an even greater opportunity to get new customers right now.
Correct. Yeah.
You know, like maybe the opportunities before didn't even exist because people were like, oh no, it's always Amazon.
Right.
When people want to support smaller businesses, they want to support alternatives to Amazon, really. You know, as long as the experience is there and you get to their site and it doesn't look totally creepy and like, you know, like a phishing site or something.
Yeah.
I mean, there's also that balance, like make your site look good. We're talking about that.
Right.
You have all the people you want there. But if it looks shady, nobody's going to be purchasing from you.
Yeah, definitely.
But yeah, I think that's probably, you can leverage that colder traffic now more than you could before.
Absolutely.
That's just my thought. But I think if I had to say my favorite tactic for warm traffic, you know, bringing warm traffic back through the funnel when they aren't converting, because I want to hear what yours is, Armin.
Sure.
I think this would be really interesting. It's retargeting, to be honest. Uh-huh. Like, and honestly, it's Facebook retargeting.
Oh, really? Facebook retargeting? Okay.
Yeah. I think that's, it's underutilized.
Oh.
Because if you use Facebook retargeting, everybody's hanging out on Facebook even more now than they ever were.
Mm-hmm.
You utilize a customer list, utilize, you know, like past visitors that didn't convert, and retarget those people on Facebook, because that's actually a much easier to consume medium than using like remarketing lists for search ads on Google.
Right.
Or a display retargeting. Cause I honestly think that I have, as a consumer, bought more from being retargeted on Facebook because it's such a much more visual medium. And that's mm-hmm. what you're on that platform to do.
True. True. I would agree. The display retargeting has not been very good for us. We've tried it numerous times. And a lot of times what happens with that is your display ads get posted in places that you don't want to end up.
No.
Right? Like mobile ads. Like if I'm playing a game on my phone, if I see an ad pop up, dude, if I'm clicking it, it's by accident. And guess what? That the company that paid for that, they're getting charged for me clicking on that by accident. And
yeah,
so that has not worked out for well for me.
I agree. Same here.
What's worked out for our industry is very specific, and a lot of people aren't on Facebook. And so that's a tough one for us to try to use.
Mm-hmm.
And so we've been trying to get things like nurture tracks and email. There's a lot more email. It's a little more old school for a lot of people, right? They're more used to mm-hmm. having email. So we try to use that as much as we can. What we've also been doing lately is a lot of webinars with everyone not being able to go to trade shows or do demos in person, right? That's not really like it's not so much a retargeting or getting someone that used to be cold, but it is, mm-hmm. hey, if you have someone that's cold, at least you have the awareness that, hey, we're doing this webinar. Why don't you join it and learn more about our product? And as long as you do it in such a way that it's, you know, more educational and not super salesy, it's a lot more welcome. And at that point, maybe you can help warm them up at that mm-hmm. point. They're still going to be pretty cold though. And definitely make no mistake that just because they attended the webinar doesn't mean that they're a customer, right? You'll probably get a lot of like college students who are doing research for like their engineering reports or something like that, right? So you have a lot of people who are just there just for the education piece, and that's totally fine, because the other side of that is maybe they don't turn into an actual warm lead or someone who's ready to buy. But it helps you establish that authority as a voice as an expert in the field that you're in.
Mm-hmm.
So that way, if it's like a college student, for example, they'll say, oh yeah, you know, I went to this Fluke webinar, you know, back when I was an undergrad. I guess they make some good stuff. Maybe I'll go buy something, one of their stuff, or make a recommendation to one of their buyers or something, higher ups.
Yeah, you're essentially fostering future customers.
Exactly. And obviously that's harder to gauge. And, mm-hmm. and you know, we're all about data, so we like to see those immediate results, but it's definitely a little bit of a softer touch, but you hope that later on down the line they'll end up converting in some mm-hmm. point.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. The one thing that I want to leave with people though, we've talked about cold and warm traffic. There is a place for cold traffic though. Like there's a reason why we do awareness advertising. There's a reason there's a reason why we still spend time with cold traffic, because you do want to move people through the funnel, and people who don't end up purchasing from you, it tends to come back around anyways, because mm-hmm. that person, even if they're not in the market for your product, they may be telling somebody else about it.
That's very true.
I mean, there's still reasons why you do that. You may not invest as much, but if you're a startup, that's probably where you're investing most of your money anyways, because you literally have no awareness. So
right.
I just want to make sure that when people listen to this episode, that they get out of it, that you should also spend time on cold traffic, because there is a reason for it.
And another part of that is just building your brand, right? Mm-hmm. A lot of that cold traffic is just brand awareness and putting yourself out there and making yourself known. And just like you said, maybe they'll tell their friends about it and like, oh, I saw this one thing. This actually sounded pretty cool. I can't buy it right now, but maybe it's what you need. Right. Mm-hmm. And that's happened to me a bunch of times. I've told a lot of my friends about, photography equipment or something like that, or a controller for a video game or something. And it gets passed down to your network, right? So that brand awareness is extremely helpful, especially for that cold those cold leads.
Yeah, don't underestimate brand awareness. Even if those aren't ROI driven metrics,
right,
there's still a reason, and it's still absolutely necessary.
And that's a very clear point. If you ever need to speak to your leadership about this, make sure they understand, like, this is not for ROI, okay? This is for awareness and things like that. So it's just one of those things that they need to understand. I mean, it's kind of like putting yourself in the yellow pages, if some of you guys still remember what the yellow pages are, right? or like an ad in the paper, right? You're just not going to see the return on that immediately. It might end up paying dividends later on down the line, but it's not a one-to-one ratio, like something like a Google ad or something on Facebook.
Yeah, it's essentially brand building. And you're going to see that long-term, if you're not doing that type of brand building, that you're going to have issues, because people do when they don't do that, established brands. So
exactly.
But Armin, I think we should probably wrap things up. I think we've talked everybody's ears off enough.
Sure.
But thanks for joining us today, Armin.
You're very welcome.
Really appreciate it. I hope that listeners got some good nuggets out of this conversation about intent-based marketing. We're going to have Armin on here again, because I feel like this was a very interesting conversation.
Yeah. Happy to be on.
That'll be awesome. All right. Well, you're listening to another episode of Digital Quarantine. Stay tuned for next week's episode.